Welcome to the Hot Lava Podcast. I'm Kevin A.C. Potters, beat writer for the Union Tribune. Ryan Finley, sports editor, joins me. Ryan, Padres, one of the hottest teams in the major leagues. Padres lost their best starting pitcher, probably for a couple months at least. And this morning, news that the Padres, it was expected, but also a surprise this morning. And certainly the price. The Padres are nearing a sale for a record for an MLB franchise, $3.9 billion to Jose E. Feliciano and his wife, Kwanza Jones, and others, but that is who leads the group. I don't think for this episode I need to ask you where you want to start.
Yeah, I think we should start there. Kevin, what do we know about Jose E. Feliciano?
Well, he owns, or his company, he's a co-founder and managing partner of Clear Lake Capital. It's a, they're based in Santa Monica, something like $90 billion in assets that they manage, which, by the way, is, let's see, 18 times what Seidler Equity handled. That doesn't give you a full picture of the wealth, but it does tell you, because I've been telling you forever, that the Padres need an owner with the money that Peter Seidler acted like he had. Peter Seidler had the vision, and you hope that Jose E. Feliciano and his group have the vision and the passion. It will be hard to match what Peter Seidler had, but they would seem to have the capital. So Jose Feliciano and Clear Lake Capital own a little over 60% of the Premier League club, Chelsea, according to various reports. They spend. It has not translated into winning, but you know, the Padres have a winning formula and winning people in place already. I think that's part of what you're buying, what you're shattering the previous record. I think that's what you're doing here is buying the fans, the city, the ballpark, and the structure of the organization.
Yep. Are people at Petco Park excited? People who work with the organization sort of
ever since they met
for what the emotion is?
Ever since they met Jose Feliciano and others back in spring training, they've been excited. And look, bottom line, they're excited by the possibility, the hope that someone with more money will infuse the team with more money, i.e. the ability to go out and make improvements and have some financial flexibility to do so rather than having to, you know, really throw prospects, which you're going to have to do anyway, but really throw prospects or eat parts of contracts or come up with creative deals to get low rent guys. The belief slash hope is that can change to a certain extent now. And that, you know, that said, I want to make sure that I compliment what first Ron Fowler, Peter Seidler, John Seidler, Eric Kotsenda, who took over for Peter after his death in 23, the stewardship of the franchise. They did what they could. You know, they brought this franchise into what we've often called the golden era, an era that not only is four playoff teams in 6 years, working on their first time, three straight playoff appearances, if they do it this year, second in attendance since 2022. Like, this franchise has, and you, Ryan, were a lifelong Padres fan. This you can speak to that this is beyond anything that Padres fans could have imagined 10 years ago, 8 years ago, 6 years ago.
The idea that they would be spending $30 million on one guy and $25 on another guy and $20 on a pitcher who hasn't thrown in more than a year, and then they get sold, and the hope is that there is even more money to splash on players. I think that is if I were a Padre fan, that's what I'd be encouraged by today, would be the idea that this is a team that has holes, and we'll get into that here momentarily. It has holes, but it packs the ballpark every night. We've seen enough, I think, so far in the first 3 weeks of the season to be encouraged by what is possible with this team. You know, now, is it just a matter of money to get them over that finish line? I'm not sure. One last thing here, Kevin. Was this the name you were expecting to hear?
I really don't want to pretend like I had any great insight. It did seem like that Feliciano, Dan Friedkin, that they were I don't know. I guess the favorites, but I don't want to say that. I mean, I had, when I heard the name Jose Feliciano, it wasn't like I said, oh yeah, of course. That is right. By no means the case. Certainly not the richest of the owners, but we have yet to find out who makes up this group, how many people are in it, what is their capital situation, most importantly, their real capital, their fluid capital, their spendable money, and their commitment to the team. I mean, just because you're rich and you want to own a team doesn't mean we know anything about you or your passion for baseball or passion for winning. None of us, I don't think, listening to this program or doing it can put ourselves in the place of someone like Jose Feliciano and his group.
Yep, absolutely. Princeton guy. So is his wife. Interesting. There are a lot of buildings with the name Feliciano on them at Princeton University, which is pretty cool. Kevin, Sunday, Nick Pivetta comes out in the fourth inning, and there was some happy talk immediately after the game that maybe it wasn't what it looked like. But now it certainly appears to be what it looked like, which is an elbow injury for Nick Pivetta that could keep him out of the Padres rotation for a very long time. What's the latest there?
Yeah, it could keep him out for the rest of the year. It could keep him out for a couple months. We will get into later, if it keeps him out for the rest of the year, kind of what that means in terms of his contract situation and all that, because it would be a club option at that point for him to stay at a lesser amount. Whereas right now it's his option, and he is undoubtedly, if he is to have any success this season, going to take that option and leave. So, I mean, very, very up in the air right now, the future of Nick Pivetta and the Padres. But for the Padres, Matt Waldron takes his place. Matt Waldron starts tonight's series opener in Anaheim against the Angels. They always talk back to 2024. That might be ancient history, given that he couldn't earn his way on the team last year. But it was real that he was their best pitcher for 2+ months. And they wouldn't have made the playoffs without Matt Waldron. And he is throwing harder, throwing a different mix of pitches, or at least, you know, different percentage of his knuckleball, throwing his fastball and his knuckleball harder. Really good spring, really good, I think, 3 minor league starts as he was getting ready for the season after missing part of the spring training with after a surgery that had nothing to do with his arm or anything like that. So we're past that. That's where we're at now. Could Pivetta come back in a couple months? Could Joe Musgrove come back in a couple months? Could Griffin Canning, who was signed in the offseason and they are high on, be here in May or maybe late May, depending on how all that goes? Yeah, they could be. But people in the organization have been talking since spring about the possibility of being able to make a move for a more of a top end starter. Lucas Giolito's name has been out there and it was floated again this week. It's someone the Padres have checked in on, and the price has not been where they felt that was something that they would do right now. Because Lucas Giolito is a 4 or 5 starter, right? Like when he's the last guy left on the market, people act like, oh my gosh, the Padres and most teams see him as a 4 or 5 starter, maybe a 3 if he's as good as he was last year in his best season and his first season back from Tommy John. So there's just a lot up in the air about the rotation right now.
Yeah, AJ Preller has proven, I think, the last couple of years that he's willing to sort of start the season with a roster and a group and see how they do, and then hope that the market sort of returns to him a little bit as they get a little bit closer to the trade deadline. To me, Kevin, I'm not the expert. It seems like that's where they're at, which is try to get these guys back, try to get Canning first, Musgrove second, ease them into the rotation, see what you've got. I mean, I can't imagine that they're going to go swing a trade for a number 2 starter in the month of April or even May, right?
I wouldn't think so, but this is where I put that bold-faced asterisk that I'm dealing with AJ Preller, and he has not only his pulse on where those players are, what doctors are saying about them, right? Maybe they don't need to see some of them back on the field because they have an idea of what they're going to be able to do and when they're going to be able to do it or if they're going to be able to do it. And AJ also knows what the market is out there and what other teams are going to be trying to get in on your number 2 or 1 starters. And what I would say is that the Padres will find a way to have the minor league players to be able to swing a deal. They, you know, not that they will swing a deal, but Cruz Schoolcraft, Ethan Salas, anybody else that is in their minor league system is available. Don't say that I'm saying the Padres want to trade them, but they have been willing to in recent months, and they will be willing to going forward. You are spot on that AJ Preller about his having the market come to him, but also him identifying what his team needs and him going after it.
Yeah, absolutely. We're probably burying the lead here a little bit, Kevin, because of all of this breaking news. The Padres are the hottest team in baseball.
What is the lead today? This is three different stories.
Right. And, you know, they're just coming off a three-game sweep of the Seattle Mariners, who may not be playing particularly well at the moment. My God, they cannot field a baseball. But this is a team that's good and is going to be good. Padres have the second best record in baseball. It's unfortunately also the second best record in the National League West behind the Dodgers. They're 13-6 heading into a three-game series at the Angels. Kevin, what has clicked here ever since they returned home from that East Coast road trip?
Well, for most of the eight-game winning streak, the core four, Manny Machado, Xander Bogaerts, Jackson Merrill, and Fernando Tatis Jr. have contributed. And they're contributing night after night for, you know, most of this eight-game streak, and actually the majority of them having won 11 of their past 12 since that second game in Boston on April 4th. And they're contributing big hits, not just numbers. I would even say big hits more than numbers, which is what you're paying them to do, what you're expecting them to do. The bullpen has, mainly Adrian Morahone not getting jobbed by seeing IE singles or you know, soft little dribblers, and Jason Adam returning. That certainly offsets the loss of Jeremiah Estrada for, you know, at least a while here. Ramon Laureano settling into the number one spot. You got the bottom of the order contributing. Like, there are signs, as there were in spring training, and even during their 2-5 start, as the good at-bats were there. Well, the good at-bats have now spread, and they're more consistent, and they're not – two aren't followed by then three bad ones or whatever. Mm-hmm. There are signs this is indeed, after, you know, I've written about this before and talked about it every year, every contending team, this is the deepest lineup we've ever had. This very well could be, and it certainly appears at this point to be, the deepest lineup the Padres have had in this 6-year run of success.
Right. I know we talk about him a ton on here, but I think it's worth doubling back on a little bit. Luis Camposano has been a big part of this too.
Thank you, Ryan. Yes.
This is a guy who's been hitting, lengthening that bottom of the order. He had a big at bat two nights ago in one of the more improbable wins you'll ever see watching baseball. What has he meant? And is it fair to say that he might be their number one catcher at the moment?
Well, at the moment he is. What a guy does on defense, and he's been pretty good, and what pitchers prefer plays a giant role in this. But certainly, if Freddie Fermin were to continue to hit below the Mendoza line, Luis Camposano would continue to have big hits, because that's really the thing. He had one game in his 8-game hitting streak where he had a double and a home run. But it's the big hits. He has an RBI in 6 of these 8 games. And, you know, he has, I think, 5 doubles. So if he were to continue to do that, well, yeah, things could change, you know? So he did a good job coming off the bench the other day when Fermin had to go out after taking what was probably his 5th or 6th mask-rattling foul ball. And they wanted to make sure, you know, we remember back in football where when we were all learning about these micro-concussions and we were learning about how the preponderance of events was more important even than the you know, ferocity of a single event. And so they really wanted to be careful with Freddie, but he looks like he'll be in there catching, tonight. I would think he was the guy left catching Matt Waldron. So I would think he'll be in there tonight and tomorrow for Marquez. Yeah, there just is no way. And I got to give credit to Luis Camposano. We've talked a lot about this, but I have to give credit Craig Stammen, Raul Padron, Kevin Plawecki, Steven Souza Jr. I don't want to leave anybody out. Ruben Niebla, teammates, have poured into Luis Camposano after 2, 3, 4 years of him feeling largely unwanted. And I'm not saying everyone in the organization, but certainly the managers before Craig Stammen and others, just the guy's confidence was shattered. Okay. And so he has stepped up, but like the intentionality, and I wrote about it in spring training, that the intentionality that these guys have had pouring into Luis Camposano, I mean, it's paying off.
It is. It is. So what did he mean when he said that sort of things started turning around when he stopped giving a bleep? What was sort of the logic that, there? Was it just that. Expectation?
Yeah. That relaxing, okay. Believing these guys, right? Like just believing these guys that they love him, that he's a good player, that he has talent and it'll be okay. It plays the hardest position on the field, the most demanding physically and mentally. And you know, still a young guy after all these years. Remember his debut, which lasted a game and he hit a home run, was in 2020. Like, been around forever. And, you know, not everybody has the same personality and not everybody matures at the same rate. And just because a guy is supposed to be in a position where you communicate and you're outgoing and you are so confident and you're Austin Hedges, but you can hit, doesn't mean you are that guy. And right. And credit to Luis. So I'm giving everybody all this credit and credit to Luis Camposano for taking ownership and for making some real changes, like, you know, in off-field habits and activities and in his owning, hey, I do need to, you know, I don't want to say change your personality, but like I do need to grow in these ways.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Padres Angels 3-game series starts tonight at Angel Stadium. God, I had to think for a minute. What do they call that?
I know.
That stadium now. It's the Big A. Yeah, we'll just call it the Big A. We talked about Matt Waldron. He goes tonight making his 2026 debut in place of Nick Pivetta. He goes up against Jose Soriano, who's actually been pretty good. He's 4-0, Kevin. 4-0 with an ERA of 0.33. Jesus. Anyway, 27 years old, veteran guy, kind of a journeyman guy, but certainly having a breakout season here. He is pitching like their ace there. Tomorrow we've got Herman Marquez going up against Yusei Kikuchi. Yusei Kikuchi is 0-2 with an ERA over 7. So the opposite of 4-0 with an ERA under 1. Herman Marquez has won back-to-back starts, pitched better in Pittsburgh than he did at home when he allowed 4 earned runs and 5 innings pitched. But I think, man, with this injury to Nick Pivetta, it becomes more and more important that Herman Marquez pitch like a middle of the rotation guy instead of your 5.
At least a back of the rotation guy, right? Like, I mean, at least like a serviceable guy, a guy who is capable of, you know, keeping you in the game, right? A guy that the offense responds to, right? Like they did in this last one, right? Like he has 2 wins in a row because the Padres came back and scored 6 runs in 2 early innings. He went 5 with a left with them up 6-4 and he got the win. You mentioned the 5 scoreless in Pittsburgh for the win. So yes, he and Walker Buehler, immensely important. You know, some people say, people that know more than me, including Herman Marquez, that his first start was his best one in terms of stuff. That's the one where he got shelled by the Giants. The stuff has mostly been there, right? It's maintaining it for a long time and making sure his pitches are where they're supposed to be because he's just not that guy throwing whatever. I think he was at 97 at one point, though. He jacked it up against the Rockies. He got up to like 96.5 and maintained around there for a while. Now, that was his former team, and he was pretty pumped, and they did score 4 runs off him. So, but yeah, you're totally right. Like the importance of everybody pitching. I feel like I got to be careful when I'm covering the team because it feels like almost every night, you want to read into how the starter does because of all the questions about the rotation.
Yeah, but it's true. I mean, there are questions about the rotation and every bad start leads, I think, a certain segment of the fan base to go, the sky is falling. And every good start leads a certain segment of the fan base to go, everything's fine. And the reality is probably somewhere in between. Sunday, you've got Michael King, 2-1, 2.78 ERA. Fascinating stats on him. And our Jeff Sanders points this out. You know, his strikeout rate is a career low, which isn't great. He's also walking a career high, four guys per nine innings. But you know what? He's only allowing 6.4 hits per nine innings. That's his best rate since 2022. So interesting. Where do you think he is sort of on his comeback trail here?
Right. Like if you're following along those very highly interesting numbers, kind of makes sense because he pitched, I think, 75 innings last year. He made 15 starts. His mechanics got out of whack because he was compensating for his knee. He's basically not like relearning to pitch, but getting back into the groove of his very complicated mechanics. You know, I can't do it here, but you know, the where he does the twist, it's a big part of his deception. And his leg falls over his other leg. I mean, it's a very unique delivery, and it has to be right. And so he's been pretty candid about working through that. The idea that he's not had what he would consider a good start yet and has the numbers he does is a mark of a burgeoning number two or number one starter.
Yep, 2-1 with a 2.78 ERA. He's going to go up against Reed Detmers, who was a starter, then a reliever. Now he's a starter again. That's the extent of what I know about Reed Detmers. Kevin, we're coming up on our time here. I put you on the spot every week. Today is no different. Kevin, how many guys in Major League Baseball do you close your laptop to watch hit? And is Mike Trout on that list?
Well, he is now, and he should be, because I don't say this lightly or to make fun, but the man has been hurt a lot lately. So you enjoy him while he's on the field. And what was it? Was it five home runs he just hit in a four-game series, was it? Was it a four-game series
something
in New
like
York?
That, yeah.
But he was crushing. He was matching Aaron Judge during that series. I read the other day he's on pace for 50 home runs, which, you know, he's a three-time MVP, but again, he hasn't played very much. I think it's maybe a little early to be talking about how many home runs Mike Trout's going to finish the season with, but that's one of them. Yes, absolutely. And especially since I don't get to see him play very often, right? Like when I see him play, it's a highlight or it's a low light of you know, him getting hurt. He's crucial, but there aren't really many. I don't have a chance to, but certainly when the Padres play them, you know, there's him, there's, you know, Shohei Ohtani. I happen to love Freeman. I didn't say Freddie Fermin. I said Freddie Freeman. So it gets confusing. Not to mention, though sometimes I'm a little busy, you know, maybe one eye, I watch the Padres stars, but I think of Jackson Merrill at bat. And I still think, and especially until he hits a home run, Fernando Tatis Jr. At bat is must see. As a matter of fact, once he starts hitting home runs, he might be back to being must see TV.
Yeah, on my little list, probably, of the guys you mentioned, I think I'd probably add Aaron Judge there, just because he's such a different looking guy in terms of big and strong, and I like watching him play center field too, to be honest with you.
It's video game at bats. It's amazing.
Yep. I put Ronald Acuna on there too. I know he's a guy, speaking of injuries, who, you know, you wonder sometimes how healthy is he, but he's like Tatis in terms of, he does some things that you don't really see in Major League Baseball very often.
Yeah, like last year off Pivetta in his first pitch back from, what, a year off?
Yeah.
Hit a bomb at Truist Park. Stuff like that. And, you know, winning MVP and you know, pretty darn talented.
Absolutely. Padres-Angels three-game series starts tonight at Angel Stadium in Anaheim. That'll do it for this episode of the Hot Lava Podcast. For Kevin Acey, I'm Ryan Finley. We'll see you next time.